Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, the co-chairman of the IBM Endowment for the Business of Government. We created the endowment in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. Find out more about the endowment by visiting us on the web at www.businessofgovernment.org. The Business of Government Hour features a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. Our special guest this morning is Bruce James. Bruce is the public printer of the United States and the chief executive officer of the U.S. Government Printing Office. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning.
And joining us in our conversation is Lauren Ewald. Good morning, Lauren.
Good morning.
Well, Bruce, perhaps you could start by telling us more about the Government Printing Office. Could you describe its mission for us?
Well, the Government Printing Office is one of the most venerable agencies of government. The roots go back to 1813, when those very smart guys who put the country together, our founding fathers, were very concerned about the concentration of power in a federal government. And one of the things they did in 1813 was pass a series of laws which required the government, all three branches of the government, to make public every government document. Initially, they assigned that to the Department of Interior, and the Department of Interior created two what they called depositories in each state. And these are, of course, the days before public libraries. And so each of these depositories got a copy of every government document. And it was their job to keep those documents in a way that the public could come in the front door anytime, take a look at the document, and to keep those documents in perpetuity. And today we have throughout the country, 53 of these what we call regional depository libraries that have one copy of every document ever produced by the federal government.
Could you give us a sense of the size of GPO, the types of employees that are there, the budget?
Well, GPO is our headquarters are about five blocks from the Capitol on North Capitol Street. We have a very large building there. If you put it out on one level, it would probably cover 24 city blocks. In that building, we employ about 3,000 people, and all of the printing work for Congress takes place there. And the work for the Federal Register takes place in a few other government jobs. However, most of the work of the government, most of the printing work of the government is vended out to the private sector. So we have 3,000 employees that both print for Congress and also manage printing procurement throughout the United States.
Can you give us some examples, Bruce, of the products GPO produces? How do the citizens like to use any of those products, or what products does GPO produce for those citizens?
Well, you know, our mandate by Congress is to produce all of the printing for the federal government, for the judiciary, for the legislative branch, and for the executive branch. So that means that that we do everything but the money, is the way I put it. We print U.S. passports, we print the Congressional Record, we print the Federal Register, as I mentioned a minute ago, and we vend out, or responsible for and vend out, such things as reports for the Department of Agriculture, the posters that you find in the national parks, the full range of government printing. We see it all.
Can you tell our listeners about the printing industry and GPO's role in the printing industry?
Well, the printing industry is the fourth largest industry in the United States in terms of employment. What's interesting about it is it's made up primarily of small businesses. There are roughly 40,000 printers, real printers, throughout the United States. And the industry doesn't have any gigantic printers. If you take the 10 largest printers put together, they probably account for less than 5% of the total printing in the United States. We fit in there. We're one of the 10 largest printers in the United States, measured in terms of the volume that we produce. But again, we both produce printing in-house and we also buy it outside. So we're probably one of the largest purchasers of printing in the United States, maybe the largest purchaser of printing in the United States.
Well, tell us about your job. What are the roles and responsibilities of the public printer?
Well, my job is to oversee the printing for the government and also to make certain that the information produced by the government, the documents produced by the government, are available to the general public. And we do this in a couple of ways. We do it through our depository libraries. In addition to the 53 regionals, we have another 1,250 depository libraries of various types. For instance, at Georgetown University, the law library will be a depository. They'll take only part of the collection, but anybody, again, can walk in the front door at Georgetown University Library and look at any of the government publications that we've sent in there. We send them to them for free in exchange for their keeping those documents and also making them available. We also have, under our superintendent of documents operation, we sell publications to the public. And you can go on our internet site, and which is gpoaccess.gov, and see the full range of government publications. We have well over 100,000 publications available for sale to the public.
Well, Bruce, you've had a long career in the printing and publishing industry. Can you share with us some of that perspective and history before coming to this position?
You want to know, Lauren, how I got in this business? Is that what you're asking?
I'd love to know how you got into this business. And at what age did you get into this business?
Well, it's pretty scary. I was 11 when I bought my first printing press. I turned 61 this year. My wife points out that means I've been in the business for 50 years. Now, that sounds like a long time, doesn't it? Although the other day I was getting a little uppity at the government printing office, and one of my managers sort of calmed me down by saying, "Look it, son, we have employees here that were here before you were born," and that's the truth. I started when I was 11. I got very interested in printing, and I built a little printing operation, employed about a dozen kids while I was in high school, and then had the very good fortune to win a scholarship to the Rochester Institute of Technology and studied printing management and science there. I went to work for a very high-quality color printer in Evansville, Indiana, worked there for a few years, learned the business from some of the very best people in it, and then got the itch to go start my own business. And in 1970, I moved to San Francisco because I had some ideas about how to use computers in the making of printing that no one had done before. And I figured San Francisco would be a great place with all the computer scientists in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley was just starting up in those days. And most importantly, people in San Francisco had an open mind toward new ideas and new ways of doing things. So I moved out there and proceeded over a 20-year period to build from scratch 13 printing and publishing businesses that operated all over the world. I had a variety of experiences in that, but I think that most people who know me would characterize each of these businesses as being built on technology. And what we would do is take an emerging technology that had not yet been applied in the printing industry, and we'd find a unique way to apply it, and then we'd build a business, and then we'd sell it to a larger company who could take it and exploit it fully.
What drew you to the public sector?
Well, I retired when I was 50. My youngest son went to college, and I figured there was no reason to have to put a white shirt and tie on and set a good example anymore. So I retired, and with my wife, we moved to what I call the mountains of northern Nevada, and we lived in a little log cabin on the banks of Lake Tahoe. And I got involved in public service in Nevada. I wanted to spend the rest of my life in public service. Ran for the United States Senate from Nevada. My wife says I won. I got to stay home. Got very involved with higher education. I served on the boards of five colleges and universities, including my alma mater, where I'm now chairman. Just had a very nice, happy, productive life when the call from the White House came in December of a year ago. And a very, very good fisherwoman by the name of Jan Williams, who said, "I work for the president. We have a job we'd like to talk to you about," really shook me to the quick. And I came back and met with the folks in the White House and met with Clay Johnson, who was running White House personnel then. And we discussed the situation that the government printing office found itself in. And it was clear in my mind that the White House was interested in finding a way to take the government printing office and bring it into the 21st century. And I had some thoughts and ideas about how to accomplish it, and we shook hands on an agreement. The president announced his intention to appoint me as public printer, and a little over 8 months later, the Senate confirmed me.
You've had experience in the private sector, academic sector, and the public sector now. How would you contrast the difference in management styles or approaches or even the similarities?
The similarities are growing in those three sectors. And I see that all the time. In the private sector, where it's for profit, everything that managers do is to drive the enterprise to become more efficient, make better use of resources, provide very good customer service. Universities years ago didn't much think about customer service. They didn't think of students in terms of customers. They sure do today, because there are so many graduates of high school going on to college. There's so much competition out there that I see that universities are becoming much more interested in providing top-level customer service and in making prudent use of their assets. Government is getting there. It's been really interesting to me. This is the first time I've lived in Washington and the first time I've worked for the government. And I actually expected to have more of a problem adjusting to this than I have. It's very clear because of the initiatives coming out of the White House, particularly driven by the Office of Management and Budget, that there is a lot more time, attention, and focus being put by government executives on managing assets prudently and in identifying who their customers are and focusing on customers and serving customers. And that's what we're doing at the GPO.
It's a good stopping point. We've got to go to a break. Rejoin us in a few minutes as we continue talking with Bruce James of the Government Printing Office. GPO recently introduced a new logo. Why does a government agency change its logo? We'll ask Bruce to tell us about this when the Business of Government Hour returns.